Howdy, what's going on? Welcome to the program. It's the Pete Callender Show. I am the Pete Callender of the Pete Callender Show, as coincidence would have it. And you can hear all of the latest episodes at thepetecallendershow.com. And you can also download the podcast on all of your favorite platforms. We are everywhere. And if I'm not on your favorite platform, send me an email, petecallender@gmail.com, and I will endeavor to get it listed up at your favorite podcasting platform. You can also join the Facebook group at The Pete Callender Show. It's the name of the group. Again, as coincidence would have it. The show is made possible by all sorts of great people like Keith and Kim and Kristen and Kim and Lori and Les and Lisa and Lori and LLP. So all of whom became patrons to the program by going to the Patreon account, and I appreciate their support. I also appreciate Mattress Man Stores supporting the program, as they have for quite a while now. Before I even started the podcast, they were supporting me on the radio show, and they do great work over there. They're great people, great products, great mattresses. They've got all of the best mattresses. The Restonic line is the Biltmore collection made by Restonic. These are fantastic beds. But they also recognize that a lot of people are not going to be able to get out and about and visit one of their four showrooms in the Asheville, Arden, and Hendersonville area. So they revamped their website, and they said, why don't we make it way, way easier for people to shop online and see everything that we've got going on in all of our stores. And they've got all their inventory up there. So you can go to the website mattressmanstores.com and you can peruse all of their offerings, the inner spring mattresses, the pillow top mattresses, the memory foam. That's what Christy and I bought years ago from Mattress Man, and long before they were an advertiser. So we believe in them. We believe in their company. They have great products. They have all of the beds, and you can get the 120-day comfort guarantee with them. So that means they want you to find the right mattress. And so 120 days comfort guarantee, it ensures you're going to love your mattress, right? And if you don't, they'll exchange it for free for the limited time. 120-day comfort guarantee. And if you are local, you get the free white glove delivery service. All right, use the special discount code RESTWELL, all one word, RESTWELL. Use that code for an additional 20% savings site-wide. MattressManStores.com. Support the local businesses here that support the program, and they want to be part of this community that we are. So that's why I'm proud to be an ambassador for their company. Experience the difference at Mattress Man. MattressManStores.com. Buy local and sleep better. So a couple of pieces of news on the COVID front. The latest projections came out today. And the projections for the number of beds needed and ventilators and deaths and infections, all of these numbers have come down. And I know some people who want to believe that it isn't that big of a deal, they're going to say, aha, this is proof that it's not that big of a deal, relying on the very estimates that they dismissed a week ago. But other folks who think that a pandemic and a highly contagious virus that does permanent damage to your lungs and such, that this is a big deal, they look at these numbers and they say, the social distancing is working, the economic, lockdown that we are in right now, it is working, and the proof is in these numbers. By the way, we will be talking with Congressman Patrick McHenry shortly about some of these very topics, about China and about the economic conditions and how we emerge from this. The IHME, which is the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME, it's at the University of Washington School of Medicine. They're the ones that put out all of these projections, and they have they've revised their forecast, which, by the way, this is going to keep happening every week or so, because as you get more data in, the models change. And so what they find is lower hospital bed need, epidemics starting to peak, and it confirms to them, at least, they say that this confirms social distancing works. So you got a couple of big data points, right? Number one, you got all this new data, says Dr. Christopher Murray, who is the director of the IHME. And the new data that they use comes from now multiple U.S. states New York, Massachusetts, Georgia, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Florida, and California. And with all of the new data coming in, now they're able to revise their estimates downward. In addition, estimation of the likely peak of the epidemic in each state has also been strengthened by epidemics peaking after social distancing in 7 more locations internationally. So they're looking at these other nations, and when they instituted social distancing programs and protocols, they saw essentially the peak came sooner. Well, what does that mean? It means that they stopped it, that the peak hits, and then rather than continuing to go up and up and up for a longer period of time, it then starts going down. So they say we're getting more and more precise data, and the forecasts are becoming more accurate. Still, there is an estimated roughly 16,000 bed shortage in America for ICU beds. And also, Murray noted that for patients who do not require ICU services, their length of stay has gone down. But for those who need ICU services, the length of stay has increased. Okay, so if you don't need intensive care, the length of stay has gone down. If you do need intensive care, the length of stay has gone up. But that could also be due to the fact, at least the first stat, could be due to the fact that if you don't need intensive care, they may not even be seeing you. They're not even letting you into the hospital to check in, whereas, you know, if it wasn't a pandemic, they would probably admit you. But now they're not admitting you. They're just saying, go home. So that could be putting downward pressure, basically, on the stats. Regarding the deaths from the virus, their forecast is about 82,000 deaths, but the range is 49,000 to 136,000. So somewhere in that range. And so what their estimate is sort of the midpoint at about 82,000. The estimated peak day, according to the modeling, is April 16th, when a projected 3,130 deaths nationwide will occur on April 16th. That's their projection. Projecting the epidemic in each state depends on predicting the peak. 1 week ago, the only place that had experienced a peak was Wuhan City. Okay, so remember, we're still having to deal with the data from that, or the initial projections were all about Wuhan. And 1 week ago from today, the only place that had experienced a peak was Wuhan. Murray cautioned, as we noted previously, the trajectory of the pandemic will change and dramatically for the worse if people ease up on social distancing or relax with other precautions. Our projections are strengthened by the new downturns in more regions, and this is evidence that social distancing is crucial. Our forecasts assume that social distancing remains in place until the end of May. I'm not sure what that means for the lockdown component here, though. Social distancing, does that mean like bars and restaurants can't open until May? That's going to be bad. That's going to be bad. If we can't get the economy fired back up by May, current events have impacted us all in different ways. Rowena Patton knows that you may be thinking about postponing or buying a home in the future, selling a home in the future now, whereas you may have been considering it, you know, a month ago. You were like, yeah, let's go ahead and do this. And now it's like, yeah, we're probably not going to do this. Either way, Rowena Patton looks forward to guiding you through your next real estate transaction, whether it's May or it's June or it's next year. Give her a call and you can get all of your questions answered just by talking with Rowena. Her phone number is 333-4483. Her website is mountainhomehunt.com. She's the official Homes for Heroes agent in Asheville, which is a national program that gives buyers and sellers 25% back from realtor commissions. And that goes to healthcare professionals, educators, firefighters, police officers, and members of the military, veterans, active duty, and retired. She's given back about $800,000 to people in those professions, and she's the only Homes for Heroes agent in Asheville. So give her a call at 333-4483, mountainhomehunt.com, and start packing. North Carolina's 10th District Congressman Patrick McHenry joins me now. Welcome to the show. Congressman, how are you?
Doing great, Pete. Thanks for having me on.
Certainly. So you are not in D.C., right? You are self-isolating, working remotely from your district, from your house.
That's right, in around Lake Norman, North Carolina. So suburbs of Charlotte. Beautiful, beautiful day. But with a 5 and 2 year old, it's not the easiest thing to office from home when my wife and I are both working. But we're making do. And if my 2 year old wakes up, well, you'll know.
That's
You'll
right.
know. I think we'll all know at the same time.
Well, that was going to be my next question was, what have you found to do to pass the time? And I guess if you have two infants, two young kids running around, you probably don't, you're probably not asking yourself that question, actually.
Oh no, I don't think so. And last couple of weeks have been pretty intense in terms of getting work done, getting the implementation of the CARES Act done is one of the big things that we've been working on.
Is that your child in the background there? Is that the one that was sleeping?
Yes, and there's my 2 year old who's saying she wants to be a part of the program.
So every we are all now what is it, the guy who was on BBC, the famous now famous video where he's doing the interview on BBC and the kids come in the back behind him, and then the his wife stumbles through the door and like drags the kids out from behind him and tries to get him
That's
off the
exactly
screen.
what's happening.
That's
Now my 2 year old is here on my lap. He wants to be a part of this. So,
Oh no.
what's great about a podcast is that this might actually sell somewhere. I just don't think it's that's not the intention here, Pete. So thanks for working with me on this.
Oh, not a problem. That's totally fine. If you need to take care of your kids, it's totally fine. If you need to duck away for a bit, that I
No, we're
totally
good.
understand.
Reese is on my lap right now, and she's doing okay now.
Okay, all right. And everybody's doing well. The family's doing well then, right?
Yeah, everybody's
Good.
doing well.
All right.
Everybody's doing well, thankfully, and safe and healthy.
So let's start with the CARES Act. You mentioned it before, and there are a lot of questions still out there about implementation and what does it mean for people. So do you have sort of an elevator pitch on or a little card that tells sort of the highlights of what this thing is? It's $2 trillion, and there's no way, obviously, everybody knows everything that's in it, right? I dare say nobody read the entire 1,000-page legislation, or maybe you did. It seemed like it got pushed through very, very quickly.
Right, but the contours of the specifics of it, I worked through. I negotiated a piece of this bill about a third of the total cost structure of this thing relates to financial products. And then we have about another 25% that is directly with the small business component of it. So I would break down the spend this way. You have direct checks that go to individual taxpayers, husband and wife making $150,000 or less, and individual making $75,000 or less. We'll get an individual will get $1,200, a married couple will get $2,400. That is probably a roughly a quarter of the bill. Let's think of it that way. A quarter of the bill is in a fund called the Exchange Stabilization Fund with Treasury. That can do lending to national security related industries. Think about aerospace, rockets, missiles, airplanes, and airlines, as well as backstop financial products so that they can continue to be made. Think about ensuring that your credit card you can still get the flow to the money on your credit card. Think a big business can get access to a financial product to make payroll for long dated income that they may have. That's $500 billion. Small Business Administration, it's $350 billion, and that works through the Paycheck Protection Act. That's Reese asking where her sister went. And so that $350 billion program with SBA, that is driven to businesses under 500 people and allows them to get lending at a very low rate, at a 1% rate for a 2 year period of time. If they pay their payroll, continue to maintain their payroll for 8 weeks, that portion of the loan will be forgiven. It'll become a grant. So the idea here is to keep small business employees paid in small businesses in existence. And then the other component of that, this bill, is it deals with tax policy so that businesses can carry forward losses, and that through a variety of tax changes, they can make ends meet and still provide healthcare to their employees and make payroll and do those things. That's this bill. The healthcare expenses were driven as a piece of that in this bill, but the bigger piece of that was in the second package, which got monies out the door for that.
So
pretty big bill, not a simple explanation.
No. Of course not. It's $2 trillion, right? So that's why I know it's kind of unfair to even ask, like, what's the thumbnail sketch of it? But I think people are most interested about the piece that affects them directly, right?
Of course. I mean, so if you're a small business person, the SBA program is the most sensitive piece. I've worked really hard this week to make sure the implementation would work. In the first 15 hours of the program, you have $1.8 billion of lending that has occurred through that SBA program. That is more than what the SBA does in a normal month.
Hmm.
More than the SBA does in a normal month. And so that is a very, quite an extraordinary amount of loans going out that are being made. If you're a small business person, that's what you think of. If you're an average taxpayer, you're thinking about getting a live check or the direct deposit. So those things are all a big component of this bill.
So was there not a mechanism or a way to get the money to through small businesses? Why not just say, what's your payroll? Here's a check. Pay your people. Why go about it with via a loan program?
There's not a simple way at the federal government to know every small business person's payroll expense.
Through the IRS?
Well, do you want the IRS to have that granular knowledge week by week? So, mm-hmm. The data is stored separately for that. And what we've tried to do is keep IRS data from being meddled with for other sort of social purposes.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of some of the questions people were asking when the details on this were coming out. Like, if it's essentially helicopter cash, and that's kind of how I've been looking at it, right? I guess maybe I should back up. Like, I've kind of rejected the term stimulus, and I kind of reject the term bailout. I view it more as a relief or rescue package. This wasn't anything that the business owners did or workers did or anybody did. This wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't reckless loans or something or bad business decisions or moral hazards or anything. This was the plague basically coming to their front door, and government, sure. Sticking a peg in the spokes of the economic wheel, so to speak. So they're not to blame for this. And so if it seems like we're just going to go ahead and say, okay, we're starting from the premise of we're just going to dump, money out of the helicopter doors, just dump it on everybody, then why not just mail out checks to everybody? Just, $2,000, $3,000, just send it all out. Everybody gets $2,000, $3,000, and recognize that, okay, there's going to be waste, fraud, and abuse. There are going to be people that get it that don't need it or shouldn't get it, but they're going to get it anyway. And just accept that because the times require you to accept that there's going to be that level of misspending of the dollars.
Yes, that is one thought. And okay. So
is that your polite way? That's your polite way of saying bad idea.
Oh, no. So let me step back and give you the way I've thought of this, because I think we're on the sort of similar sheet of music here. Not on the same note, but on the same sort of page, mm-hmm. of music. So I looked at this event as if it were a hurricane, an earthquake, a flood, right? So you're living peacefully by the river, and there are massive rains, and you are now without a home, right? And no way of life, no way to provide for yourself for a brief period of time. Well, that's a natural disaster. We step in and try to make people whole, and try to do so in sort of a reasonable way. That's one way to look at this. The way I think about this CARES Act and the amount of money we're spending on it, I think of it in terms of a taking by the federal government or the state government.
Yeah.
I think of this as eminent domain. I don't like the use of the eminent domain power by government. I don't. But if that happens, I want to make sure that we make people whole, or as close to whole as we can. Mm-hmm. And so an event like this, I look at it and say, well, the idea of getting money into small businesses so they can maintain payroll and keep employees employed. If you don't have an employer, if your employer goes broke, you can't be an employee, right?
Right.
And if you lay your people off, they're now unemployed, right? I mean, so let's keep people, employers employing people. That's great. But I agree with you. If there was a simple mechanism by which the federal government could readily deposit money in people's accounts and say, here you go, for the next 2 months, here is the way that we're going to keep funds going out the door so that you can actually pay your bills and survive. And on the back end, you have tax policy that would take this for the people that are more prosperous, right? So I get the idea. The mechanisms here, I was arguing with senators about just the basic structure of this thing,
right?
Because I think they went and created way too complex financial products for what the need actually is.
Right, like one of the things is the look back to 2018 income to determine what the checks are now. I mean, my status has changed obviously since 2018, but I can see where I don't think it's going to affect me because I was making more money back then than I am now. But for people who it's vice versa, you know, they're going to get screwed. It seems like.
Yes.
No.
Yes, and there's some. Okay. They are.
Yeah.
There's just no getting around it.
Yeah.
When you have government take action, you have the legislative branch take action in 2 weeks to spend $2.5 trillion. Yeah, you're going to have some bad stuff in there, and I mean, look at the Kennedy Center stuff. Like, that is not a national crisis, national emergency to get money for the Kennedy Center or for National Endowment for the Arts or whatever,
or public radio or
Yeah, I mean, that is greedy politicians trying to pad their relative political allies, and I think that is exactly why I want a limited government. But also, if we have a limited government and we have structured our finances correctly, we then have a rainy day fund, right? So you have a rainy day fund, then you can make these decisions much more readily. Without the complicated economic consequences that we're going to face because of basically our profligate spending over the last couple of decades.
The concern that I'm hearing now, and maybe North Carolina, we've been under our stay-at-home order, and in Buncombe County here, we've been under it for going on, this is like 3 weeks. And, you know, the governor has extended it through the end of April. And I noticed there seems to be a slight change and evolution, if you will, in some of the reaction when I say this. Whereas when I originally started saying what I'm about to say, people accused me of wanting other people to die. But now it seems like there's a willingness to entertain the thought, which is, how do we emerge from this? Because, like, what I'm looking around and my concern is that, and as the president said, like, this, our economy was not built to be shut down like this. And what's happening in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks is you're seeing, yes, all the unemployment claims coming in, but now you're going to start seeing sort of the second wave is the destruction of wealth and businesses that will close down and never reopen. Savings accounts, college savings, retirement savings are going to get wiped out. And it's devastation. And so I'm not clear as to, and maybe that's the thing, like I'm asking for clarity here, because it doesn't seem like anybody has a plan for how to emerge from this at some point sooner than, you know, in our case, April. But I'm not even betting on that. And I look up the road in Virginia, and Governor Blackface went and did through June 10th or something, June 10th. Like, I don't understand. Like, that to me indicates societal collapse at that point. How do you have an economy shut down for 3 months? I cannot fathom that.
Oh, I can't. And you know, we've got all these political analysts that are saying, well, you know, this crisis exposes our economic frailty. Wait a second. No one predicted that we're going to have a shutdown of, I mean, you're basically talking about the GDP on a 40% of our GDP disappearing for 2 months. I'm sorry. That's not on anyone's risk profile.
Right.
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 And when you say a rainy day fund, you don't have folks thinking, I'm going to go from making a very nice living to making zero. That's not an easy transition for really, you know, 95% of the American people. And you think about businesses, you think about local governments, mm-hmm. that are so dependent on hotel room night taxes and the airport landing and takeoff and all those systemic things that just happen, right, of buying stuff, right? They don't contemplate having 2 months of, you know, revenue being cut in half. So this isn't exposing of anything else other than we've got to do a better job of testing, right? I'm sorry. It does highlight some issues that we've got to deal with in order to deal with this health crisis.
Right.
But it doesn't have this larger economic sort of idea around it. So to that end, how do you reemerge? Scott Gottlieb put out an interesting approach. The way I look at it is pretty simple. You get mass testing, and then people know that you're in a safe zone or not in a safe zone. And if you want to move out of a hot zone where there is a high incidence of this, then you need to have further orders to stay in place. But if you have a county that doesn't have a high incidence of this, then you should be able to move more freely than if you're in a hot zone where there's a higher incidence of this. Well, how do you know? And how do you know if you're infecting other people? You have to have ready tests. And the better able we're to get testing to scale, meaning a technology that ensures that testing can happen very, very quickly, then we can reemerge. And it means if this virus, as is likely, reemerges next fall, mm-hmm. like the great influenza, you know, Spanish flu of 1918 reemerged, then we have to have testing at such a rapid, massive scale so we can function. We don't need to have a shutdown like this again. And we need to be able to get back to economic life and feel safe doing it, that we're not putting people at risk.
Right. Yeah. And because come fall, this can't happen again. And I don't think people will put up with it again, because at some point people will go sort of cabin fever crazy. And, you know, if it comes down to not being able to feed their family and getting evicted from their apartments or thrown out of their homes by the banks or the county, like, you know, people are going to behave in different ways than they are right now. If, you know, what are you going to do? Cancel school again in the fall? This is not a sustainable track that we're on. And at least now I'm seeing, yes, and I think widespread testing is the first thing that has to happen. So to that end, what is the role for the federal government, if any, in doing this?
Well, what I will say is that the president and the administration has done a good job of sticking to the confines of constitutional order. It is not for the federal government to issue a stay-at-home order. Mm-hmm. That is not what we want as a federal police state. a state government and a local government, they have different rights and responsibilities that we've given them, but not the federal government. The federal government should not be the one dictating when we emerge or do not emerge. And so what the president's used is the bully pulpit to say, these are the things we should be doing. You should follow these orders. And governors can make those decisions, and local folks can make those decisions.
So let me just ask you this way, and to shift gears to the origination story here. Do you think that the Chinese government misled the world on this virus?
So let me say it this way. The Chinese government misleads, period.
Right.
We know that. Why? Why do we know this? Because communists lie. That's what they do. It is in their nature, and it is a part of their orthodoxy, and it is Marxist theory, Stalin and Lenin, who built that out into some actual piece for a nation state.
Mao.
Communists lie. Mm-hmm. And Mao, and then Mao it took it to what is a form of what we're experiencing with China. So China, the Chinese lie at home, and they lie internationally. The regime needs to lie to their people in order to stay in power, and they need to lie internationally in order to keep their lie going at home. So that's what I know. I know that in the experience over the last, for decades of experience of reading about communists and understanding communist theory and how they carry out their ideology. I know that. I do not know in this specific instance that they lied. I do not yet have all the pieces to make that proclamation. However, I would say if they were lying, it wasn't about this specific incident. It was because of tradition. It's what they do.
Just muscle memory.
What they right, like this. It's the story of the snake, right? The snake bites.
Right.
Well, it's just in the snake's nature, right? So, I mean, I don't want to be glib about it. Now we do know that they were saying different things internationally than what we know of the actions through social media before it got quashed. In the early goings of this thing, especially in early January, I think there are ready signs that they were acting in their traditional form.
Mm-hmm. What about, well, should they face any, assuming that they that there is proof and there's emerging evidence even today? I was reading Jim Garrity at National Review, and there's like apparently there are two bioweapons labs that are in Wuhan, and both of them happen to be working on bat viruses at the same time. And now some of the people that were cited on their websites are now gone, and they were hiring for certain positions. But you can go down this, and I don't speak Chinese, so I cannot verify any of this. But let's assume that it turns out that this was not by not intentionally released, but accidentally got out of the lab, right? And it would explain why they, why they destroyed the lab cultures and stuff, and gave all these different conflicting stories and stuff to try to cover their tracks on this. Assuming that's the case, what sort of repercussions should China face for that?
Well, I think this is one where you have to have a concerted international response, because, the devastation wrought on the whole world. We've contemplated invasion in a number of different ways, but not invasion via a virus.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly this is an invasion, and we have to respond to this like it's an act of war.
Well, they're moving troops in the south. South China. Oh, I don't want to say that. Yeah, south in the South China Sea.
South China Sea.
Yeah, I mean they've moved a bunch of troops around in that body of water now, and it's like, yeah, I mean, if you want people to doubt your intentions, keep doing what you're doing, China. It seems pretty.
Oh, yeah. No, they have a worldview that they're trying to put in action.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Absolutely for sure. And for those folks that were more favorable to China, if this is not a wake up call for them, then they got deeper psychological issues they need to work on, deeper physiological brain function that they got to work on.
Do you think that, I think we probably agree, this is a generation defining event. It's going to be like pre COVID and post COVID. How do you think society changes? And I guess sort of the easiest one would be, because we're talking about China, our relationship or manufacturing relationships with China. What do you think changes? What does this look like? Have you heard people raising these sorts of concerns and saying, you know what, going forward, we're going to find ways to bring a lot of this stuff, you know, pharmaceutical production, bring it back home, stuff like that?
Well, you think about the changes that came about with the First World War. There was a realization of policymakers in Washington that we have key pieces of our defense equipment and economic capacity that came from Germany. And coming out of World War One in the 20s, they created a number of different, they changed a lot of policy out of Washington to ensure that we had those optionalities in other parts of the world, that we weren't so reliant on Germany. And that came into play in the 1940s and made us much stronger to respond in World War II. I think likewise, we have to have a deeper contemplation of our supply chain and the minerals and materials that we use to build our society. Those base materials for most of our pharmaceuticals come out of China. That is a massive risk for us. Technology that is a basic chipsets coming out of China, we now are much more, have greater heightened awareness around that risk. So I think we have to rethink a substantial amount of our global supply chain in light of this to make sure that we're more secure if we ever face an event, anything like this. Additionally, because of how we've approached this crisis, I think we have to think about how people live and work. And we've got more folks that are gig workers, and I guess you'd be a gig worker,
But well, what's a gig? Let's define that first. So what's a gig worker?
Well, I think a gig worker is somebody who doesn't work for a paycheck for some single other entity. It could be a sole proprietor. It could be somebody who has two or three different jobs in order to make their income stream work for them. Could be somebody who has does Uber or Lyft. Mm-hmm. But also it does insurance, sells insurance during the day.
Right.
Right. So people that want to have a greater deal of flexibility and control over what they do and how they engage in it. So I think we need to have a better look at the social safety net for those workers and access to financial products that look like what you would get if you're an employee of, like a Fortune 500 company. How do you access those things? How do you readily access those things, whether it's healthcare, retirement, savings, insurance products, and things of that sort? I think we have to look through, I think we have to have a better understanding of that and make sure that people can make their lives work. And I think that really is heightened right now. Because we're all locked in, and a number of these different revenue sources for individuals has been locked out.
There is a certain class divide that has occurred here with a lot of people in sort of the knowledge industry able to work from home, and a lot of people who are not in any of those industries that are not able to work from home, and they get deemed to be, quote, essential personnel, so they have to keep going to work and, you know, risk exposure. I mean, I went down today to the store and, you know, went to the grocery store, and the people that are working at the grocery store, they're putting themselves at risk by going to work. And people in the knowledge economy don't necessarily have to do that. They can, hole up in their apartment like I'm doing right now. I can hole up in my apartment and only leave for, for groceries and essential items. So the longer this goes, I think the starker that contrast and the wider that divide becomes, and people become acutely aware of it.
Yes, and I agree. And I think it makes us rethink who we think is essential. There's a great assumption that, high income earners view themselves as essential. And when what this economy is showing is now we've had a skewed sense of who is important. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one example, right? My 5-year-old is in kindergarten. Her school has a plan for online learning if something happens for the school, not contemplated for a month, but contemplated for a week or 2 weeks or something like that. And so my wife and I are sharing duties on homeschooling our 5-year-old.
Right.
And I know a lot of people homeschool, and I've got I tip my hat to them. Actually, I bow to them because, I mean, they're amazing, and I'm realizing this. But I realize that my daughter's teacher deserves to be paid about $1 billion a year.
stimulus or the next relief package?
There you go. But I mean, I think this really reorients people's thinking about what is important, your relationships in life, and some of the really basic things that we lose sight of because we're so busy doing other things. I think this is really an eye opener for all of us as individuals, for families, for communities.
Has there been something that you have, rediscovered or discovered for the first time in your time at home now that you're spending all this time at home? Like, has there been sort of like a kind of a moment where you realized this was kind of good for you? You realized, I wouldn't have known this otherwise.
Well, the funny thing is I've been so damn busy in response to this with, working the bill to make sure and negotiating the bill so it was a better product. And then now the implementation piece that I haven't been able to really mm-hmm. look up and get any sense. What I knowing, that 3 weeks in that my wife and 2 kids and now my mother-in-law who's with us, that this has worked, right? And we haven't left other than for, exercise in the neighborhood.
Right.
Right.
Well, maybe that's your thing. Maybe that you realize like you could actually be quarantined with your family. If you doubted that could happen, it relieved the old doubt. Yeah.
It really has. And it really, is positive to know that, I love my family. I don't want to be hokey about it, but like but as a father, it also focuses me more on these 2 kids.
Yeah.
Because they don't really, my 2-year-old doesn't get it, obviously, but 5-year-old is asking these questions. And you're like, we just want a protective environment for our kids. And, you think about that a little more sharply in times like this. Mm-hmm. And it does refocus you around what are priorities versus what truly is important.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a nice thing for us to be able to see that is in the midst of all this stuff, one of the positives of just giving us a little bit of clarity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's after, climbing through, what is economically and health wise, just, many, many yards of horse poop before you find the little piece of
Right.
gold,
Well, and it is a coping mechanism, which is why I try to ask people questions like that, because it's very easy to see the negative, obviously, all the time. And so there are some positives. Like, for example, if people have discovered that they need a new hobby besides just eating out, like this was a good opportunity to learn that. Also, the value of a good office chair. Really, like that's like people who are now working from home, and they thought, oh, I'll just buy this, cute little chair, and now they can't sit in it for longer than 2 or 3 hours because their back is killing them after that. So, yeah, like little things like that. It does make you it focuses you on different things that you never may have noticed or thought of before. Just like all these circumstances. I also saw, by the way, you were on Cheddar TV, I think it is what that thing is.
Yes.
Cheddar. Are you a big fan of Cheddar? I didn't even know it existed. I was even, so.
They basically bill themselves as CNBC for millennials. They're basically a digital native money talk,
So this was the first time I saw you with the new haircut, though, and I think it looked good. So for folks, if you people are not aware, you've cut all your hair off. Was this
Wait.
intentional?
Is this? Thank you for, I'm trying to follow a good lead here, right? No. What I decided was, I kind of realized a couple of years ago the trend was not my friend when it came to hair. So I'm like a little. I had this mindset for the last, year or two. I'm like, I wonder what my head looks like, because you really don't know until you lose your hair,
That is so
whether or
true.
not, right? So I decided a week ago that I said, I'm going to shave my head. My wife's like, just do it. You've been talking about it for a while. This is a good time. So I just took some clippers and took it all off. And the shape of the head's not bad.
No, it's not. I mean, I've seen some badly shapen heads, and yeah, you lucked out with that. That's and like you said, you never know until you try it whether or not your head looks good, because most of us, once the hair comes in, that's it. And yeah, I cut mine off for a charity event several years ago because, yeah, it's like I could see on the back of the head there it was starting to thin out a little too quickly, and I was like, well, I gotta see what this looks like just in case. And once I saw, I was like, okay, I could probably live with this, that's fine. And some other folks I've seen, it's like, yikes, you're gonna have to pay for something, because like that's that is your dome is not looking very good. So yeah, so words of encouragement for you. I thought that I thought you looked good with it. So if you're on the fence, I'd say you should probably give it some time. It'll grow on you, or not, I guess.
Oh,
Yeah.
thank you.
Most importantly, what does your
Thank
wife
you.
think? That's the key. What does your wife think about it? That's the key.
Well, now that I'm a couple days into having a little more hair, she thinks, going with no clip may be a little too aggressive. My 5-year-old, though, every day she's taken to commenting about my hair. It doesn't look as bad as yesterday.
Because it's growing in. I was going to ask if you're going to go right to the razor and just go all the way down, get it shined up, do that, go that route. Because I mean,
I don't think
if you're on quarantine here, like this is the time to try like all of it,
Well, I looked at that and thought, I don't think I want to commit to that much shaving
Yeah.
every day. I mean, I
True.
think less work when it comes to hair is better.
Well, and that is, think of the amount of time you're now saving in the mornings when you get up and you get ready to go to work and stuff. You're not going to have to worry about the shampoo. You're not going to worry about any of that. It does save you a lot of time. It's why I quit shaving my face.
Well, that's great. I think I'm not going to advertise that because your time gets taken away from you when you say you've got more time, more available.
That's right. That's true. That's true. All right. Anything else that you want to add? I'll just give you an open mic here. Anything else you want to add that you think is important or interesting for folks to know?
No, I do think this larger question of what society looks like after this. I think it's good to think through that, and I think it's one of the more interesting questions to ask right now, because it is in and of itself an optimistic question, meaning we are going to get through this. We will make it and things will get better. So let's think about how we want that to look. And I think it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. So I think people need a little bit of that optimism right now. The thing that I think is important for all of us is to stay connected to those people that don't have people close to them, loved ones or live alone or those that are in a senior center where we can't go physically visit. I think those are the things that we need to try to do and be good to our fellow man, especially in these times of stress.
Yeah.
I think that's something, I think that's something we all can do in our own way.
Well, it's, if you want government to do less, we've got to do more. And that's at the core of the conservative philosophy. So it's difficult, I know, because, getting out and not being able to, be socially, non-distanced from people, I get it. But, people can help in all sorts of ways. And social media is filled with ideas to help other people. And it's so, yes, there's a lot of garbage on social media, but there's some positive stuff, too. And it's sort of like any kind of crisis or catastrophe. Look for the people who are helping. And focus on them, because there's enough bad people around doing bad stuff. So look for the good people that are helping, and that will sort of renew your faith in humanity oftentimes.
That's right. That's right.
Congressman Patrick McHenry, we appreciate your time. As always, stay safe, and hope to have you back on the show soon.
Hey, thanks, Pete. Appreciate it.
All right. Are you prepared for disaster? Do you need some advice? Are you looking for military surplus that is real? Well, then stop looking, because I can tell you exactly where to go. It's Old Grouch's Military Surplus in downtown Clyde on Main Street. Old Grouch's Military Surplus. It is a it's an old school traditional military surplus store, but it has a mix of modern and vintage items. Go see my friend Tim, and he will hook you up. He gets new stuff all the time. He's obviously moved a lot of his operations online now, and so you can go check out what he's got at oldgrouch.com. If you maybe just need some advice on preparedness topics, he can do that for you as well. Oldgrouch.com is the website, oldgrouch.com. If you're looking for something, Tim has it, or he knows where to get it, and he will ship directly to you. Oldgrouch.com, old school, traditional military surplus with a mix of vintage and new items. And by the way, use the promo code Pete and get 10% off. Tell him you heard it here. Another piece of bad news, I guess, here. Just as China is about to lift travel restrictions in Wuhan, the city considered to be the country's one-time epicenter of the coronavirus, Beijing has now reported an increase in asymptomatic cases, which raises new concerns about a second wave of infections. China has reported about 3,300 deaths, which any rational person would recognize as a lie. The Reuters report, cited by Fox News here, that China allows residents in the city to leave their homes in compounds that are considered to be epidemic-free. The status of 45 compounds, though, have now been revoked since the increase in asymptomatic cases. If you like the show, the content we're doing here, the interviews that we're doing, please subscribe to the podcast, give it a thumbs up in the reviews, and consider becoming a patron of the program. Links are all at thepetecallinershow.com. Thank you so much for your support, and we'll talk to you later. Don't break anything while I'm gone.